Welcome to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. We are going to be having an informational hearing today, and we'll be hearing from Representative Deb Keel on an important bill relating to Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's research in the state of Minnesota, and we'll look forward to testifiers. We do not yet have a quorum, but we always start on time, so we are going to get moving, and we will interrupt and bring the meeting to order when we do have a quorum. So I would just invite Representative Keel to begin with your testimony and just kind of lay out what we're going to be hearing from in about this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm thrilled to be here. I'm excited about this bill. We have a lot of struggles with Alzheimer's and dementia, and feel that this will be a good way for us to move along some research and also help for families. And I have with me Senator Carla Nelson, who is really the author of this bill and has done much of the legwork on this. And so I'm going to let her explain what exactly this is going to be.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, and Representative Keel. Well, it's great to be back in this hearing room, and I appreciate Representative Dean, almost gave you a demotion there, some would say, Representative Dean.
Not everyone.
chairing this committee today. And it's an honor and a pleasure to see all of the purple in this room today and those who are wearing purple for a purpose. And I will tell you that Alzheimer's is a very personal issue for me. Just like growing numbers of Minnesotans, Alzheimer's touched my life when my father was diagnosed. We received that suspected and yet dreaded diagnosis that my father had Alzheimer's. And it was a disease, it still is a disease, without a cure. And that's the reason that I sponsored the Minnesota Alzheimer's Research and Support Act. Minnesota needs effective treatment, it needs prevention, and it needs a cure for Alzheimer's. Age is the largest risk factor for Alzheimer's. Already today, 1 out of 9 people at age 65 have Alzheimer's. And by 83, 1 out of 3 have Alzheimer's. And to put that into perspective for you, what those numbers mean and why this is such an imminent and growing need and issue, 10,000 people woke up today and turned 65. Tomorrow, 10,000 people will turn 65. And the next day, another 10,000. And the next, and the next, and the next, for the next 19 years. Think about the impact this disease is having upon every aspect of our society, our government, our health systems, our social systems, and most importantly, Minnesotans. So the Minnesota Alzheimer's Research and Support Act creates two types of competitive grants. First, it establishes a competitive grant program for research focused on prevention, treatments, causes, and cures, with priority given to those proposals that have the greatest scientific merit and are the most likely to be effective. The second type of grants will help empower caregivers through tools to cope and better care for their loved ones and to help us all work to build a dementia-capable communities across our state. It will provide statewide public education and information promoting the early diagnosis of Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is the most expensive disease in our nation, and it is the most under-recognized public health crisis of our time. I'm confident that Minnesota can find the solution and can lead in that. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to invite some of our expert testifiers to the table.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And we do currently have a quorum. And so I would like to call the meeting officially to order. And we do have some minutes to approve, so we're going to do that immediately. If I could have a motion to approve the minutes from January 20th, 2015. Do I have that?
So moved.
Oh, okay. We do need to make a correction to that. Before we do that, we are going to add Representative Allen to the members present portion of the last committee and apologize for that. So with that correction, do I have an motion?
So moved.
Your motion, Representative Backer moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Motion prevails in the moment the minutes are adopted. So Senator Nelson, if you'd like to continue with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I call up Sue Spaulding, let me just get on the record, lest we forget, because it's essential. We have bipartisan support for this bill. There's nothing partisan about Alzheimer's. It affects every one of us in some way. It is affecting us across this state and nation. And I'm glad to announce there's bipartisan support in the Senate. Senator Pappas, the President of the Senate, Senator Cohen, our Finance Chair, and Senator Kathy Sharon, the Chair of the Health Policy Committee. Senator Rosen, who actually did a lot of the work in preparing us to get to this point in the Act on Alzheimer's legislation of 2009. Senator Rosen is also supporting this bill, so we have a nice bipartisan support there. And as you can see, we have not just bipartisan support, but bicameral support, and we know that's necessary for all legislation. And I'm just so thankful that Representative Keel is chief authoring it in the House. I know she has great co-authors lined up, and so we look forward to moving this forward. Mr. Chair, I'd like to invite Susan Spaulding, the CEO of the Alzheimer's Association, to the table.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Spaulding, if you could come down and introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Spaulding.
Thank you. My name is Susan Spaulding. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am the Chief Executive Officer of the Alzheimer's Association Minnesota North Dakota Chapter, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. Founded in Minnesota in 1979, the Alzheimer's Association is the world's leading voluntary health organization in Alzheimer's care, support, and research. Our mission is to eliminate Alzheimer's disease and other dementias through the advancement of research, to provide an enhanced care and support for all affected, and to reduce the risk of dementia through the promotion of brain health. The Alzheimer's Association is committed to accelerating progress of new treatments, preventions, and ultimately a cure. The association works to enhance care and provide support for all those affected by Alzheimer's and reaches millions of people affected by Alzheimer's and their caregivers. Alzheimer's is a progressive brain disorder that damages and eventually destroys brain cells, leading to a loss of memory, thinking, and other brain functions. Ultimately, Alzheimer's is fatal. Currently, Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States and the only one of the top 10 without a way to prevent, slow, or cure its progression. There are over 5 million Americans living with Alzheimer's, including an estimated 100,000 people in Minnesota, and there are more than 240,000 people caring for those people. While deaths from other major diseases, including heart disease, stroke, and HIV, continue to experience significant declines, those from Alzheimer's have increased 68% between 2000 and 2010. With the first of the baby boomer generation already over 65, the U.S. population age 65 and over is expected to double by 2030. Although Alzheimer's is not normal aging, age is the biggest risk factor of the disease. And taken together, these factors will result in more and more Americans living with Alzheimer's, as many as 16 million by 2050. When there will be nearly 1 million new cases each year. Alzheimer's disease is an epidemic. More Minnesota families are going to be touched by Alzheimer's and at a frightening rate. It is a public health crisis and the defining disease of the baby boom generation. For millions of Americans, the heartbreak of watching a loved one struggle with Alzheimer's is a pain they know all too well. In addition to the human suffering caused by the disease, Alzheimer's is creating an enormous strain on the healthcare system, strain on families, and creates an enormous burden on family, state, and federal budgets. In 2009, Representative Steve Gottwald authorized legislation creating the Minnesota Alzheimer's Disease Working Group. This ambitious group spent 18 months developing a report detailing recommendations, carving a path for the state of Minnesota to address the growing Alzheimer's disease crisis. This landmark report, Preparing Minnesota for Alzheimer's, the Budgetary, Social, and Personal Impacts, recommends steps that will transform Minnesota into a state that is ready, willing, and able to meet the challenges of Alzheimer's disease. Act on Alzheimer's, a coalition formed to focus on implementing this initiative, is comprised of 300 highly respected experts in the fields of neurology, Alzheimer's research, long-term care, organizations such as Health Partners, Mayo Clinic, Medica, as well as representatives from the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health. The momentum of Act on Alzheimer's has led us here today. The Alzheimer's Association appreciates the steadfast support of the Minnesota Legislature, and we look forward to your continued commitment to find creative solutions in order to address the Alzheimer's crisis. We ask that this committee to take the lead in the 2015 session with a commitment equal to the scale of the crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spaulding, and thank you for the advocates who've come to the committee today and for your rally. We were over at the History Center for the had a very, very great event, and also congratulations on your chapter's great success in fundraising and organizing. I was reviewing some of the materials, and I think you've just done a fabulous job making Minnesota proud to be at the forefront yet again in the field of medicine. So we do appreciate all the work that you are doing and that your organization is doing in Minnesota.
Thank you.
And with that, Senator Nelson, would you like to have as the next testifier on batting order here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to call up Dr. Ronald Peterson, the Director of Mayo Clinic Alzheimer's Research Center and Chair of the National Alzheimer's Project Council.
Good afternoon, Dr. Peterson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony in whatever way you'd like. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Ron Peterson. I'm director of the Mayo Clinic Alzheimer's Disease Research Center and the Mayo Clinic Study of Aging in Rochester, Minnesota. Both of these projects are funded by the National Institutes of Health. This is an exciting time to be involved in research and care for patients with Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. And I'm thrilled to be in Minnesota taking part in one of the challenges that's addressing the state and this country. The time is now. Currently, as Sue mentioned, there are approximately 100,000 persons in Minnesota with Alzheimer's disease, 5 million nationally, 30 million globally. It is truly a global phenomenon, and nobody is spared. The toll that dementia takes on individuals and families is incalculable. The impact on society is enormous. We've been very proactive here in Minnesota to address these issues in many ways, and I'll return to that topic. From a national perspective, Congress passed the National Alzheimer's Project Act in 2010, and the President signed it in 2011. This law required that the Secretary of Health and Human Services, then Kathleen Sebelius, develop a national plan to address Alzheimer's disease, since this had never been done previously. As part of that charge, Secretary Sebelius appointed an advisory council on research, care, and services, and I was honored to be appointed the chair. The council oversees the plan and gives recommendations to the Secretary herself and to Congress directly on how to deal with Alzheimer's disease now and in the future. The plan outlines an ambitious goal of preventing and effectively treating Alzheimer's disease by 2025, seemingly way out there, but just 10 short years away. The plan is divided into five goals covering research, clinical care, caregiver support, education, and awareness, education awareness, and the metrics of how to measure the effectiveness of the plan. The law requires that the plan be updated annually, and the council is busily preparing on recommendations for the 2015 plan. While it is difficult to be certain if the plan has had a definite impact thus far, funding for Alzheimer's disease at the federal level, while most other federal funding has gone down, has actually increased by about 20%, in part possibly due to the effectiveness of the national plan. And I think that a similar phenomenon could be observed here in Minnesota. There's been an increase in dementia globally as well. In December of 2013, the United Kingdom Prime Minister David Cameron used the last year of his G8 presidency to devote the final summit to the topic of dementia. As a follow-up to that meeting, several legacy events have occurred in 2014 around the world, and a couple more will be held yet this year, next month in Washington, and in March in Geneva. As part of that activity, Prime Minister Cameron also appointed a World Dementia Council, and I was fortunate enough to be included in that group to coordinate these issues to continue the global interaction among countries, not only the G8, G7 now, but expanding to G20 and other countries as well. The overall impact of this is to emphasize the point that dementia, and particularly Alzheimer's disease, is a global issue that impacts millions of individuals, families, and the economic picture of all countries. I'm proud to say that Minnesota has been a leader among states in addressing the Alzheimer's crisis. There are approximately 35 states that have plans for addressing Alzheimer's disease, but only about a half dozen actually have any resources or funding to support these plans. In 2011, Minnesota published a comprehensive plan to prepare for the development for the developing epidemic of dementia. This plan led to the creation of Act on Alzheimer's, a collaborative effort in which people from the community sectors throughout Minnesota worked together to accomplish transformative work on Alzheimer's disease. This effort includes work to build dementia-capable communities throughout the state. I can say that the impact of Act on Alzheimer's in Minnesota has been far-reaching. The director of that program, Olivia Mastry, was invited to address the Advisory Council on Research, Care, and Services for the National Alzheimer's Project Act last year and impressed the entire council with the forethought and the accomplishments of ACT on Alzheimer's disease thus far. The program has received recognition with national awards and is being considered for broader adoption throughout the country and internationally. It may very well be included in the 2015 recommendations of the council that are being sent forth to the Secretary and the Congress this year. Minnesota should be proud of this effort because it's leading the way to developing a dementia-capable community structure in Minnesota. If I may say just a few words about the disease process itself, because sometimes the terminology is confusing. Dementia refers to a disorder of the brain that affects one's ability to remember, think, and ultimately function. Alzheimer's disease is one subclass of dementia, but up and away, the leading cause of dementia. Alzheimer's disease is a deterioration of brain cells for degenerative reasons with certain proteins that accumulate, and in aging, again, the largest cause of dementia. But there are other dementing disorders, such as something called frontotemporal lobar degeneration, affects a different part of the brain. Dementia with Lewy bodies affects certain other systems in the brain. But these are all, at present, untreatable, devastating, degenerative neurologic conditions. Currently, a great deal of research is focused on the early identification of the disease process with the hope of early intervention. Many studies are underway, some in Minnesota, dealing with typical aging populations trying to identify early features of the disease, perhaps through biomarkers, which can be detected in the blood, cerebrospinal fluid, or by neuroimaging measures of the brain.
Excuse me, Dr. Peterson?
Yes, sir.
If it's okay, we've got questions that typically come up during the committee. If it's all right, if we just interrupt your testimony to ask them if that wouldn't be too disruptive. Representative Purcell.
I prefer to wait to the end. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I just wanted you to know.
No, thank you, Representative
Purcell.
I prefer
to wait till he's done.
All right, Dr. Peterson, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with regard to Alzheimer's disease, we do know a great deal about the underlying biology, and now are able to detect these proteins as they develop in the brains of even normal people. This will give us an opportunity to prevent the disease before it even develops. Some of the pioneering and trend-setting work is being done here in Minnesota. Dr. Karen Ash from the University of Minnesota has done landmark work on the earliest pathologic features of the disease with the intent of trying to develop targets that would be treatable. The Minnesota State Plan suggested a development of techniques for the early identification of individuals who might be experiencing cognitive impairment. Health Partners has developed an algorithm to identify possible cognitive impairment in the primary care physician's office. The Affordable Care Act required that the Medicare annual wellness visit now contain an assessment of cognitive function. However, the law stopped short of saying how you do it. Health Partners, their colleagues, have taken on the task to actually define how this might be done for primary care physicians, which is critical since most people with evolving disease will present to their primary care physician initially. In Duluth, the Essentia Institute of Rural Health is carrying out a project, which is state-funded, to implement decision support tools to improve dementia diagnosis, treatment, and management in primary care. And Dr. Steve Waring from Essentia is here this afternoon, and he will present in just a moment. At the Mayo Clinic, we have extensive research programs on the development of biomarkers in aging and disease. We have a project underway in Olmsted County. It's been going on for over 10 years, looking at individuals who are randomly sampled from the population, which is a unique capability we have down south. And this project has provided enormous information for the field, and several of my colleagues have led the way in describing models of disease progression that are, in fact, being adopted and studied around the world. We've seen over 5,000 people in one of our Olmsted County projects, and we're trying to use this corpus of individuals to really learn about the disease in its very earliest stages, applying this biomarker technology, imaging techniques, to determine whether a person who may have some of these features, say on a brain imaging study, is in fact going to be symptomatic 5, 10, 15 years down the road, because now is the time that we would want to intervene. This is a truly unique study and really can only be done here in Minnesota, and in particular down in Olmsted County because of the unique relationship with Mayo. So in addition to the groundbreaking research done in Minnesota, Minnesota has also been attendant to the needs of caregivers. The Minnesota Board on Aging has been very active in dealing with issues pertaining to the needs of caregivers and maximizing the quality of life for all persons involved. So in conclusion, I cannot think of a more timely opportunity for Minnesota to continue to expand its leading role in fighting dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The proposed legislation sponsored by Senator Nelson will augment the resources of an already active community of investigators and provide support for agencies charged with the provision of services. The proposed legislation has been thoughtfully composed to include rigorous scientific review of a competitive grant process, which will guarantee the absolute highest level of academic excellence. I'm proud to support the state of Minnesota through these activities and look forward to greater progress in combating these dreadful diseases. And Mr. Chair, they talked about possibly showing a little video clip. Is that, do we have time for that?
I don't know if it's teed up or how long.
I think it was teed up. Okay.
We're ready to go. Let's.
The 2 minute, I think it's a. What we have is Mayo, in its attempt to increase public awareness of Alzheimer's disease and problems with it, the plight of the caregiver, chose to support a movie, a documentary that was put out on Glenn Campbell, who many of you may know was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease and decided to continue his tour after the diagnosis. And the movie, I'll Be Me, characterizes that, and I think we just have the trailer of that, if we could, for a couple minutes.
This is Campbell, how does it feel to be the mother of one of the finest recording stars in the country?
Well, we're really proud of him, everything.
The record he's got out, which I guess is one of the biggest records he's ever had, called Rhinestone Cowboy. Somebody told me he's on the way to selling 2 million copies of one record.
Entertainer of the year was Glenn Campbell.
Growing up across the world, Glenn Campbell showed me what country music was.
Glenn Campbell has been making music history for decades, and he still is. He took country music to new heights and became a global superstar.
He was the first singer to win in both country and contemporary categories in the same year.
Who is that?
That's Billy.
Billy? And who is she?
That's your second wife. You were married for 16 years.
Really?
You divorced. Then you met me.
This indicates that in all likelihood, your difficulties are due to Alzheimer's disease.
Yet.
Yeah.
Tell him that.
The audience being there somehow triggers his ability to access that other part of his brain, which is incredible.
Fantastic. Unbelievable.
Musicians like Glenn, it's magical is what they did. It's magic.
Part of me was afraid that I thought people were going to the show because they were going to see a crash.
It's a rough disease. To be out there rolling the dice was pretty brave.
Look at all these people. Slow down, there they are.
Just healthy all the way around, to keep a merry heart. I think you'll be healthy, and not just to fight Alzheimer's, but to fight anything you're up against if you can keep a good sense of humor.
Rue, are you kidding me? That's not a 75-year-old body. Just don't turn sideways.
How's the Alzheimer's coming along, Glenn?
Oh, that's fine, yeah.
Gave him a left hook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson. We have two questions. First question, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd seen that trailer before, and it strikes me to comment that how important creativity is to our being. And I think the Glenn Campbell experience certainly brings that out when we talk about creativity with young kids' childhood. It's there. It's there at the end.
Exactly.
My question was, you've talked about peer review science or rigorous research. Can you provide, and not from memory now, but in writing, if you would, what peer review journals publish Alzheimer's research, and perhaps what you've done? I'm sure New England Journal and others, but
absolutely. Thank you, Representative. I think Alzheimer's disease research is at the highest level of scientific integrity these days, and you're right. It's published in the New England Journal of Medicine, Science, Nature, JAMA, as well as the neurology journals and neuroscience journals. So it's right up there at the top. And actually, the journals like it because it's such a popular topic that when there is a premier article published, it gets high readership and a great deal of attention. So it's really at the forefront of science right now.
Follow up, Representative Peterson, or Purcell, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just ask the Chair if we could have access to some of those articles, probably through Department of Health. I know we aren't all members of them, and you can't access unless I know the journals I am a member of. But if we could arrange to have access to some of that information, it would be helpful.
Thank you, Representative Purcell, and I'm sure the committee administrator will be in contact with the advocates and can get you that information.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Chairman. I was really hoping, Chairman, that you'd belt out like a Rhinestone Cowboy song after that video. One of my favorite singers as growing up. Say, Doctor, I have a question for you. Senator Nelson gave the statistics of one of nine, age 65, get Alzheimer's, and by the age 83, one of three. But it's also evident that those younger can also get Alzheimer's as well, and even dementia, and even on top of that, Parkinson's. So a kind of a trifecta. So I have a two-part question, and I'll pause for the first one. Do you have any data on the ages of, say, 45, 50 to 64 that suffer from Alzheimer's?
Dr. Peterson.
Yes, thank you very much, Representative McDonald. the figures in the country are, as we said, about 5 million for the total disease, but about 500,000 or so are 65 or less. So while it is a disease of aging, Ms. Spaulding said it goes up, aging is the biggest risk factor for the disease. Young people are not immune. As it tends to be, the younger the people get the disease process, there's more of a genetic or familial component. Not always, but often. But it's a significant problem in people at younger ages as well.
Mr. Chair, and Dr. also compounded on top of that, those suffering with Alzheimer's, what percentage also have dementia and also Parkinson's?
The combination of Alzheimer's changes in the brain and Parkinson's changes in the brain, which is separate for a motor involvement, you know, the coordination problems, the tremor and the like, it can be as high as 20 to 30% of people with Alzheimer's disease will have what are called alpha-synuclein deposits, which are the pathologic accompaniments of Parkinson's disease in the brain. And then there's also an intersection of these disorders in something called dementia with Lewy bodies, where they have features of cognitive problems like Alzheimer's disease, motor problems like Parkinson's disease. And then to further complicate matters, people with Parkinson's disease purely can develop cognitive problems later on. So these are all degenerative diseases of the brain, and what separates them is what part of the brain gets affected. Is it the memory part, the motor part, and all the combinations of them?
Thank you, Dr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. One more.
Representative McDonald.
Well, thank you, Doctor. The reason I ask that is I have a friend in the audience today, Lindsay, from my hometown, and her mother is just a few years older than I, and she's suffering from Alzheimer's as well. And so it hits home clearly. It's a horrible disease. There's nothing we can do to stop it, and I support this 100%. I'm sure we all do. Is there any evidence in your research at the Mayo that if it's caught early on in a younger age, those who are, you know, the 65 or less, the 20 to 30%, the 500,000 people, that if it's caught early on in that younger age, that you're able to hold it back or slow it down, or any research to help that?
The honest answer, Representative McDonald, is that that we really do not have any what are called disease-modifying therapies or treatments, meaning that if we intervene now, we'll slow the course, delay the onset. That's what we vitally need. That's why the research is absolutely fundamental at this point in time. We have treatments, we have medications to help with the symptoms, and we still believe early detection is a good idea because there are many other things that can be done for the person. But in reality, we don't have any therapies right now, and this is where the field is lacking. And I think with additional support, some of that work at the University of Minnesota may, in fact, pay off in that direction. But we really don't right now.
Thank you, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Doctor.
All right, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and hi, Dr. Peterson. And Dr. Peterson is my neighbor. For those who don't know, literally my neighbor. He lives right next door to me. Dr. Peterson, I was noticing in the testimony of Ms. Spaulding, actually, she noted that deaths from Alzheimer's have increased 68% just over the last, over from 2000 to 2010, while we know that deaths from a lot of other major diseases have declined. And that's a pretty striking thing, and I wondered if you could flesh that out for us a little bit, because obviously I don't know if that's straight-up numbers. I mean, obviously, people have to die from something,
sure.
So maybe that doesn't mean what it might appear to us lay people to mean.
You're right. Those numbers, Representative Liebling, first of all, your husband brought the garbage in this morning, the garbage can, after.
Good to know. Thank you.
Just as we were leaving, he was bringing in. He said, say hello to my wife. I will be happy.
Thanks for the update.
That's
from
probably not
account.
Relevant for the record. I apologize for that.
We have garbage there, too, Mr. Chair.
The numbers are sometimes deceptive insofar as, you're right, where do they come from? What they're trying to imply with those is that certain causes of cancer, the rate of death per year is actually declining. Same thing for heart disease, to a certain extent, diabetes and HIV/AIDS. HIV/AIDS is a good example. Have we cured it? No. But it's now a chronic disease, where it was a rapidly lethal disease 20, 25 years ago. So those rates of death are decreasing. But because we have no disease-modifying therapies for Alzheimer's disease, we have nothing that actually impacts the rate at which people are dying from the disease. Now, the terms, the statements we make sometimes at the federal level for this, and these are only loose connections, but the federal government spends about $6 billion on cancer research a year. Great. The heart disease, cardiovascular disease, gets about $3 billion. HIV/AIDS gets about $3 billion a year. Alzheimer's disease, we spend less than $1 billion, about $600 million a year. Now, does that mean that you throw money at it and the problem goes away? No, but in fact, those other disorders have shown some significant progress in treating the underlying diseases, either converting them to chronic diseases or reducing the death rates in them. So the implication is that we need to do this in Alzheimer's disease.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson. Representative Liebling.
Thank you.
Thank you. No, there's no other questions, Dr. Peterson. So, Representative Keel, would you like to proceed with Dr. Waring at this point?
Yes, we'll call up Dr. Waring and have him testify. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Doctor. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Steve Waring. I'm a senior research scientist at Essentia Health and at the Essentia Institute of Rural Health in Duluth, Minnesota. And it is a privilege to be here, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, and certainly to see all the purple in the audience. It truly is an exciting time for Minnesota and for all of us in Alzheimer's. There's no greater disease out there right now that impacts all of us so profoundly. So I think it's timely that we're having this discussion, and I thank Senator Nelson and others for having the vision and recognizing that Minnesota really would be the place to begin to get a better handle on this. So my good fortune of following good friend and colleague Dr. Peterson is that there's not much left for me to say, actually. But some have alluded to some of the issues about the impact, and that's what I'm going to share with you. I think all of you have been provided a set of the slides that I prepared. And certainly this is a 10,000 foot level look at it, but I think we'll circle back on some of the questions that have already been raised and hopefully address some of those issues clearer. So we've heard about the impact nationally and what it looks like. You know, I'm an epidemiologist. We do a lot of statistics. We all know what, you know, we say about statistics. But really a lot of this has to do with not so much the sheer magnitude, but really the trends that we see. And I'm going to show you some things that are driving that trend that I think are, it's not just a prevalent issue right now, but it certainly, unless we get a handle on it, in 5 years it'll be much worse, in 10 years even worse. People describe it as a tsunami, but I've never seen a tsunami that keeps getting deeper and deeper and stays for so long. So, you know, hopefully we can, and the type of legislation that we're talking about today, begin to get a handle on this. We've made great progress, but there's still a long way to go. So we've just discussed the thing about the deaths and all, and I will just say that when we think of deaths due to anything, many times we're relying on information from death certificates. The CDC and the Center for Health Statistics uses that information in the most pristine and rigorous fashion. Their definition is how many have died from Alzheimer's disease, which means that Alzheimer's appears as a primary or contributing cause on the death certificate. That's a different number. The other end of the spectrum is a study by the Chicago folks, a very good study that's provided a lot of the background information for the impact of Alzheimer's disease and a lot of the figures that we use to estimate what we think the impact is here in Minnesota. And that other end of the spectrum is died with. So when you think about died with, I think you hit the nail on the head. We all have to die of something. And what's happening is that there's a reverse trend going on with we're eliminating dying from cancer less and less. We're eliminating dying from cardiovascular and other things. So unfortunately, Alzheimer's is what's left. And I'll get into some figures here in a little bit. But the key here is when you see figures, I understand why those are confusing and why people are saying, well, I don't think it's much of a problem because, you know, you may be looking at one definition and somebody else is looking at a completely different one and all. So that's up to us to try to help you sort that out. So when we bring this to Minnesota, first of all, we know we have a baby boomer effect, but this is what it looks like. And if you've seen those population pyramids where you have males on the left side and females on the right side and you have five-year age strata going all the way up, generally, before the baby boomer population, those things got smaller and smaller. Each strata got smaller. They were pretty much the same width for a while, and then they started getting smaller. Normal attrition due to death. But what's happening is it's like the boa constrictor that swallowed the pig. It's kind of, there's this big bulge, and the big bulge is the baby boomer bulge, so to speak. And so that's driving all the estimates that we see. And these figures come from the state of Minnesota's website, which are based on the census data. And so as you can see, in the year 2030, the expectation is that one in five Minnesotans will be what's considered an older adult, will be in this age group at risk for Alzheimer's disease. So naturally, that's what's driving when we project out the prevalence figures, when we take those that information from other studies and we apply that to our population. It doesn't take a mathematician to figure out, if you figure about one in, let's just say 11%, okay, 10% is easier to deal with. Let's just underestimate it a little bit. If you've got a population anywhere, some town that has 1,000 people that are over 65 years of age, then you can be pretty safe in the assumption that 100 of them are living with dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Puts it in perspective. And so that's what drives these. Obviously, as you get into the older age strata, your risk goes up. And so that's what we're looking at here. And you can see we're starting at about 100,000, a little over 100,000 now. And we're going all the way up to well over that in a fairly short period of time. And most of that's being driven, again, by the explosion of the baby boomer population coming into the age at risk, the numbers that Senator Nelson alluded to each year. So Dr. Peterson, I think, alluded to this earlier, and I just to put this in perspective, when you think about the progress that's been made for these other diseases, HIV, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. Now, this is a chart that I put together based on figures. The research dollars come from the NIH website, which these were just published in early 2014. So these are just NIH dollars spent. So this does not in any way represent all the research dollars spent. But most of the research that goes into these diseases, most of that actually does come from NIH. And so when you look at about $6 billion for cancer, little over $2 billion for cardiovascular, over $3 billion for HIV/AIDS, And you look at the cost of care, and we try to get at total cost of care, which is, again, when you think of what does a disease cost, there are a lot of things, and those of you who are living with a loved one with Alzheimer's disease understand this. There are a lot of costs that go way beyond what the medicine costs or what the visits cost or what the diagnosis costs, and really get into loss of productivity and all the things, because sooner or later somebody has to quit their job to take care of that person that has Alzheimer's disease. And so all of those things factor into what we call kind of a total cost of care. And so you can see what's off here. The Alzheimer's costs us so much money, yet the ratio of dollar research dollars to total cost of care is way up. Now, we're not advocating by any means that we want to take that money away from cancer and cardiovascular and HIV/AIDS and all the other things. No, we want to keep that there. We think that's working. Obviously, it's working. But we do feel like, as Dr. Peterson said, that this is a very tough disorder. It's really a challenge. And there's a lot of incredibly talented people. We're fortunate to have Dr. Peterson and Dr. Ash and folks like that right here in Minnesota. These are the rock stars of Alzheimer's research. There could be no better place for Alzheimer's research to be supported than the state of Minnesota. And so with that, we know that the $500 million a year, sure, we're not going to turn it away, but we also know that it takes a lot more. And I think Bob Agee, who's a VP of Public Policy at the National Alzheimer's Association, says it best. Without quadrupling research funding, this is at a national level, to $2 billion a year, then us getting our goal of prevention and treatment by 2025 is really a moot point. What does that mean?
That's my Siri on my phone. I so apologize.
Siri didn't
Siri
like what I said.
She wants to hear that.
I have a question.
Again.
Right. And so what this would do would bring this ratio down to about $1 research dollar for every $100 in total cost of care. We can live with that. If we can get there at any level, then we'll do the rest of the work. And so I leave you with this, what I think of in terms of the younger folks now that are at risk. I have not one but two friends that were diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease at 55 years of age. And amazingly, we used to think that diagnosis carried a different trajectory. The younger you were when you got it, the more rapid the decline would be. But surprisingly, that's not the case with both of them. And what I've noticed with the one, I see him every year with their family. They get together in northern Wisconsin, which gets to the video, which I've got to get myself one of those videos. Dr. Peterson's a hard act to follow, but now that he's got this video, it's like, that's really tough. But when you see that, you see that engagement, that social engagement, all the things that go into music and dancing and all that stuff, I see that in my friends. So when we think about what can we do, why would you want to know if there's no treatment? We get that barrier from providers all the time. Why would you want to diagnose something that you can't treat? We say you can. We say we can slow that trajectory. We can change that trajectory. Not for everybody, but we think if we're wrong 50% of the time, at least the 50% that we're right on, that helps. Quality of life keeps them at home longer, keeps them active longer, keeps them functional longer. So I think of it in terms of changing your trajectory at any time, whether you're 20 or 80. And if we're preclinical, we want to be able to identify those folks who, if there's certain interventions, we can't roll out an intervention for everybody at 50 years of age. But if we have a profile that says, okay, we think your risk is such that you might benefit from this or this or this, and we think that that's not going to prevent you from getting Alzheimer's, but it may delay that onset by five years, most of us would say that's a heck of a start. We'll take it. And so that's what I try to present here. All the things that we know are going on with Alzheimer's, and we're involved in research up at Essentia, looking at traumatic brain, looking at the cognitive effects on falls risk, as well as the Dementia Capable Healthcare Home project that's funded by the state that we are doing through primary care. And we're changing culture, by the way, by doing that, because physicians do not, primary care especially, are not comfortable with making that diagnosis. Number one, they don't feel like they know enough to be able to talk about what does that mean and what can we do. So we're empowering them with that knowledge with clinical decision support tools that were created by the Act on Alzheimer's. I had the privilege of serving on that group, and we created those tools with Health Partners, with Terry Barkley and others, and they have been very well received at Essentia, but it takes a while. It took us over 2 years to get them to the table to talk about it, to get this into the electronic medical record, to help guide them through. And the most important part about it is that they recognize the fact that 10% of what you do for an Alzheimer's patient is done by the healthcare delivery system. The other 90% is done by all your community partners that are out there. So making communities dementia capable is a number one priority and needs to remain a number one priority. And so when we think about what should we do in Minnesota, what would stand make us stand out from other places, really I think it's more of just thinking about how to leverage the talent that we have and how to leverage the momentum we have with Act on Alzheimer's and with the Alzheimer's Association, two of the nationally leading organizations. We've already got a lot of work there. So if we can support that, if we can do the research that says the money is better spent here, maybe not so much here. Evaluation of programs, implementing things and saying how well does that work, and when it works, who does it work for? Does it work for everybody, or is it maybe more focused on rural settings or urban settings or whatever? So we think of this in terms of multidisciplinary approaches and how to get at that problem. There's no research team that I'm on that we don't have a broad spectrum of community partners that know a lot more about the disease than some of us that think we know so much. And so I think those are the kinds of things that the research dollars and the state of Minnesota is way ahead of, and the research dollars would definitely be value added. I close with this. We think about what's the value in delaying onset. Maybe we can't prevent it. Maybe we will never be able to truly prevent Alzheimer's disease. But if we can delay it, and if we can figure out these markers and these things that go into whatever pathway that got somebody to a certain point to get that diagnosis, if it only affects 5% of that population, whether it be here in Minnesota or in the U.S., 5% is a big chunk. That's a heck of a start. And over 5 years, you can see even in the state of Minnesota, that's 25,000 less people that have Alzheimer's disease. That's a heck of a start. And I would just close by saying that, again, it is a privilege to be here. And I do support everything that the state of Minnesota is doing. That is one reason you may pick up a little hint of a little further southern accent in my voice. But that is one reason I'm here, and that's one reason I plan to stay. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and audience.
Thank you, Dr. Waring. We appreciate your testimony, and the slide deck is in everyone's folder that was passed out. We appreciate that. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, Doctor, question for you. In the amount of monies that's spent both at the Mayo and the University of Minnesota and perhaps even elsewhere in other states, obviously this is more than a state problem, it's a worldwide problem, but we'll just focus on Minnesota. I see in both your bill, Representative Keel, that some of the funds eventually, and as you stated in your testimony, Doctor, trickle down to the communities. And the data that you gave me, but correct me if I'm incorrect in stating that of the millions of dollars spent on the study and try to come up with a cure, much of that money, or some of that money, I should say, let me retract that, goes down to the community to help the very families and patients that suffer from Alzheimer's. Is that correct?
That is correct. More recently, because much of our funding now requires that you have community stakeholder, community engagement, patient stakeholder groups as part of planning the research, coming up with the right research questions, and bringing it down to that local level. So there is a shift, and I suspect I would defer to Dr. Peterson if in fact even on the NIA funded centers, whether or not there's more and more of an emphasis on how much of that money goes to supporting the community piece. A good question, though.
Thank you, Dr. Waring. Representative Halperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Waring. I was a caregiver many, many, many years ago did a lot of work with patients who had Alzheimer's in long-term care settings, and I'm sure there's a lot of official and unofficial caregivers in their purple shirts here today, and it's amazing and remarkable work. The fact that I did this work so long ago really made your testimony amazing to me in terms of how little has changed since I did that work, particularly in terms of the difficulties of diagnosis. You know, 20 years ago, we would hear it's a difficult disease to diagnose. You really can't diagnose it very accurately on the front end. It's much more on the back end that you're doing the diagnosis. And it sounds to me that we haven't made much progress, and I would assume it's because of the inequities of research dollars that are going into it.
Dr. Warren.
Sure. I just want to clarify that the difficulty is not in diagnosis. We've come a long way in being able to describe clinically what used to be, had to be pretty much verified at autopsy. And I would imagine most clinical sites, Alzheimer's research sites like Mayo Clinic, I happen to have been there, so I can speak for that. There are correlations between what did they look like clinically and those that went to autopsy are pretty high. So we're clicking on most cylinders. And as we learn more and more about the contribution of vascular disease, vascular dementia, the frontal temporal dementias, and other types of etiologic subsets of dementia, we begin to refine that ability clinically even to make a fairly precise diagnosis. The difficulty I was trying to describe, that clearly I didn't do a very good job, is trying to get primary care physicians to make the diagnosis. So we've given them, through the annual wellness visit, we've embedded the MINICOG, very simple screening. We use the MOCA for the second step. If they fail the MINICOG, about 25 to 30% of the folks that get that screening at their annual wellness will fail the MINICOG. That doesn't mean they have dementia, but we do want to take them to the next step to see that. We've been able to get most of our providers that are using that. We have two pilot sites, fairly large sites, it took a while, but they both like the MINICOG and MOCA together as opposed to what has always been used, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with, the mini-mental test. And we feel like the MINICOG and the MOCA are much more appropriate for early detection and earlier end anyway. So we're making progress, but I think the difficulties is just getting over those barriers of providers to have the confidence and feel empowered to say, okay, I can make the diagnosis, and we've given them the tools to say, okay, you can hand this off at any time, and this is when you do it. You hand it off to specialty care for additional further refinement of the clinical diagnosis, and then you hand it off to community partners and RN care coordinators to be able to manage that, because the management piece is what really is the daunting task, as you obviously know, having been a caregiver. So,
well, thank you so much. I'm sorry, follow up?
Let's follow up quickly, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. That
sure.
That is very helpful and very good news. I am curious with regard to the, it sounds like you're trying really hard to integrate primary care as a step into diagnosis and treatment for Alzheimer's. Are there, you mentioned you have some pilot sites. Are any of those in greater Minnesota where we have more trouble finding primary care providers? Or?
Dr. Warren.
I guess we're the poster child for difficult areas to get services to. Essentia serves a primarily rural population, the upper third of Minnesota. Not only is it a rural population, but we have the Iron Range clinics in the Iron Range and all. And so we have difficulty getting our patients from one Iron Range site to another because they don't trust people in the town next to them and all. But in spite of that, Essentia, of course, is an integrated healthcare delivery system. We recognize that challenge. We use telehealth. We use all sorts of ways to get to that. And so most of what I'm talking about and what we're doing at Essentia, we're not doing in Duluth. We're doing out in those areas that you're describing. So, and hopefully these will be something that will generalize to other populations. That's what the state is hoping. They funded us to be able to kind of test this and then see how well would this work in other areas. And we suspect that with a little tweaking here or there that it should pretty much apply most anywhere.
Well, thank you so much for your testimony. We do appreciate it. Where are you originally from?
Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas. Right. Well, thank you for practicing practicing here in Minnesota, and just tell all your friends and colleagues to come on up here, and we'll have them speaking normally in no time.
You don't want my friends to come up here. Be careful what you ask for, Mr. Chairman.
They make more fun of the way we talk. So, all right. Next up, Representative Keel, you have Marvin Lofquist.
Yes, Dr. Lofquist is a member of the Alzheimer's Association Early Stage Alzheimer's Advisory Council. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Marvin Lofquist. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Marvin Lofquist, and I thank you for the opportunities to speak with you today. I grew up in a family with a history of heart disease. Both of my parents died of heart disease by the age of 65, and both my older and younger brothers have had heart attacks. Suffice to say that cardiovascular health has always been the focus of my attention. Prior to my diagnosis, I had limited awareness of the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease and never expected that I would one day be living with the disease. In 2010, after retiring from Northwestern University as an associate dean of the Weinberg College of Arts and Sciences, my wife Elaine and I moved from Chicago to Minneapolis to be closer to our children and grandchildren. After the move, I began to notice that I was not making much progress in learning the names of surrounding streets and new acquaintances. I soon found that I could not remember details about our appointments or social events, even if I saw them listed on our calendar. I would ask Elaine to clarify who we were meeting and where we were going. These were all topics we had discussed, but I could not remember the details even a few days after we had made the plans. At a checkup with our family doctor, my wife and I shared our concerns regarding my increasing difficulty remembering details. The doctor recommended a variety of medical and psychological testings that led to the diagnosis of early stage Alzheimer's disease in May of 2012. The news was delivered in a straightforward manner, and I was not particularly surprised, rather disappointed. I knew that I had difficulty with the cognitive exams, but I was hoping my scores would still be considered somewhat normal. However, in retrospect, I realized that the last 6 months of my employment had been filled with examples of difficulty remembering the details of ongoing projects. The diagnosis confirmed my worst fear, but I knew I had to accept this as my new reality. After giving ourselves time to feel sad about this diagnosis, Elaine and I decided to share the information with our children and other close family members. 2 years later, in the spring of 2014, my wife sent a letter to a larger group of our extended family and friends explaining my diagnosis, but also focused on how Elaine and I have chosen to live our lives moving forward. We believe it is important to be open with others in order to reduce the stigma associated with this disease and to surround ourselves with support. Having a diagnosis has shifted the burden from worrying about the cause to working on solutions to daily challenges and coming up with new ways to cope with the disease. A better understanding of my strengths and limitations has allowed me to plan better and reduces my internal tension between denial and reality. After the diagnosis, my neuropsychologist recommended the HABIT program at the Mayo Clinic, which provides education about mild cognitive impairment for patients and their care partners. Through this program, we learned about the Alzheimer's Association and began attending an early-stage support group program through the Minnesota and North Dakota chapter. I quickly decided that if I was going to have Alzheimer's, I was going to get involved and see how I could help as an advocate. In a personal way, when I talk to other people about the disease, I am also talking to myself. As I am encouraging others to be strong in their determination to live well with the disease, I am also hearing this message and strengthening my own resolve. I can be tall. I can be short. I can have cancer. I can have heart disease. I can have Alzheimer's disease. But I am still Marvin Lofquist. I am still Elaine's husband. I still have a son, David, and a daughter, Laura. I am still Marv. I'm still me. Having a PhD in chemistry gives me the natural inclination to look for ways to support research to combat this disease. This motivation led me to my enrollment in the Alzheimer's Association's trial match in the pursuit of participation in clinical trials. Research is the way we learn how things work. Research is how we can find what molecular changes are helpful and which are not. Disease is the result of unhelpful changes. We need to find ways to stop those unhelpful changes or reverse them. Sounds simple to me, but as you know, it is far more complex. I currently serve on the Minnesota North Dakota Advisory Council and the National Early Stage Advisory Group. Over the years, I have served on various boards, and when I retired, I planned on serving other boards. My involvement in the Alzheimer's Association has restored my confidence that I can still contribute to society and make a difference through sharing my story. Addressing the scourge of Alzheimer's means supporting people living with the disease, the care partners, and those doing research to find a way to end Alzheimer's. These endeavors have costs, but they have value beyond calculation. Your support is monumental in the effort to end Alzheimer's. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Locke. We appreciate your testimony, and thank you for sharing your diagnosis and for the work that you are continuing to do, and it is important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Ryan Kiskis from the Alzheimer's Association. Mr. Kiskis, please say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Ryan Kiskis. I'd like to thank the committee and all the people here that have invested their time for this very important cause. I think I'd also like to point out that obviously Marv is very heroic for being here to tell his story, but there are thousands of other Minnesotans that can't be here because of the nature of this disease, because they're suffering from it or they're at home caring for someone that's suffering from it. So I'll be honest, there are a few other places I would have probably rather been today. I would have rather been with my dad planning a fishing trip, running to Home Depot, or catching a basketball game. Heck, I'd even prefer a lecture about banking or politics. Instead, I'm at the Capitol because my dad, Lenny, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease when he was 56 years old. I was in college at the time and eventually had to move back to Minneapolis to help care for my dad as the disease progressed. I watched a proud and successful bank executive forced to leave a career he loved because the disease took his ability to learn and problem solve. Alzheimer's changed my dad from a loving husband and father to an angry, paranoid, and irrational person. I watched my family struggle with the relentless unpredictability and financial burden of caring for someone with Alzheimer's. The disease took away my dad's pride and ability to remember the people he loved. Many people do not realize the constant state of loss and grieving that accompanies the progressive nature of Alzheimer's disease. It's not just the loss of memory or the loss and grieving that takes place once your loved one has passed away. I watched my dad lose the ability to walk, and I grieved that we would never go skiing or see another baseball game again. I watched my dad lose the ability to speak, and I grieved that he would never be able to give me advice again. I endured the disease knowing each day robbed me of a little more of my dad, while I could place no hope in a treatment or a cure. A year ago, my dad died from Alzheimer's. He was 64. It's becoming apparent that Alzheimer's is the health crisis of our time. You've heard it's the most expensive disease. You've heard it's one of the most expensive diseases in the U.S. and the only top 10 cause of death without a means of treatment or cure. But I'd like to emphasize that no treatment, no cure means a diagnosis equals no hope. But the thing that scares me the most about the disease is how much we seem to still not know and how much more work needs to be done to overcome the disease. When my dad was diagnosed 10 years ago, I just assumed we'd have an effective treatment or cure by now. After all, we live in the U.S. and so many people are affected by the disease. But here we are, and every day that goes by, this brings a greater chance that my generation will still be fighting the disease in 20 years. Minnesota has a role to play and the infrastructure to be a game changer in this fight. We have internationally recognized Alzheimer's research centers in the Mayo Clinic and University of Minnesota. We have the chairman of the National Advisory Council on Alzheimer's in the Mayo Clinic's Ron Peterson, who you've heard from. We have the world's most powerful imaging magnet at the U of M, an incredible tool that can be used to better understand the brain and Alzheimer's disease. Texas and Florida have passed similar legislation in addition to other states, and Minnesota should also provide leadership in the fight against Alzheimer's. My generation is joining the fight in greater numbers every day as we see more and more of our loved ones affected. I represent the Alzheimer's Association Young Champions, which is a group of Twin Cities-based young professionals that have been affected by the disease and have come together to try to change the face of Alzheimer's. We are fighting because we have experienced the destruction and hopelessness of Alzheimer's. We are fighting because we know how urgent and complicated this crisis has become. We are fighting because Alzheimer's is killing our grandmas and grandpas, and we're fighting because Alzheimer's is killing our mothers and fathers. For 8 years, I fought Alzheimer's to save my dad's life, but he died from the disease a year ago. Shortly thereafter, I became a dad myself. I have a little boy at home about to celebrate his first birthday who will never meet his grandpa. This is my son, William. I don't ever want to have to tell him his dad is going to miss his graduation or forget his name because of an untreatable and incurable disease. That's why I'm here to fight Alzheimer's today. We want the state of Minnesota to join the fight. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Kiskus. We appreciate that and appreciate you sharing your story about your dad. Well, members, we have, this is an informational hearing. We will not be acting on the bill, but we will be seeing it again through Representative Max, Representative Schumacher's committee, and probably here as well, but did want to welcome the advocates who are here today and provide an opportunity to share some of the information, and particularly with some of the expert testifiers that we were fortunate enough to have today. I think the testimony speaks for itself, and I think we saw lots of staff and lobbyists kind of wandering in and out of the committee hearing because I think it probably touched them in some very personal way at home, and it touches just about everybody we know. One of the things that struck me about this is that nationally, 5 million people in the United States have this disease, which is about the same population as the state of Minnesota. And thinking about it nationally, $217 billion a year is spent on that, with Medicare, Medicaid, private pay and other sources, and that does not include the amount of time that is invested by family members and donated to that. So when you think about that, just in pure dollars and cents, which is what our committee inevitably has to deal with, just think about the fact that nationally 20 times our total state budget, 20 times that amount is spent nationally fighting this disease and providing for care. And people wonder why it's so expensive, and it's all direct care. It's very, very expensive, and it's very labor-intensive, and it's and that is provided by very good people, family members, and professionals in the state of Minnesota and across the country. So really appreciate the advocates coming today and appreciate members' time. Representative Keel, would you like to wrap up with any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would, and I believe Senator Nelson would like to make a few comments, too. First of all, I would like to thank the Chairman Dean for signing on the bill and also for his support in bringing this forward. Also, Chair Schumacher is on the bill also in the support that he's given to this. This is an exciting, difficult, challenging issue. But the excitement is that we can fund research to figure out how we can deal with Alzheimer's and also the grant programs to help families deal with it. I personally learned how to handle dementia by way of my grandmother in the 80s when there was no Alzheimer's unit and there was no help. So when an Alzheimer's unit was available, we moved her in there, and she was an accomplished musician. I find this very interesting listening to. I guess I just think music is a wonderful background. But anyway, she couldn't see, nor could she remember my name, but she could play a lot of music. And when I first put her in the Alzheimer's unit, they didn't want to have a keyboard in that unit. Because they were afraid it would disturb the patients. After encouraging them and begging for them to let me bring in an electronic keyboard, I did, and they discovered that not only did it calm my grandmother, but it also calmed the rest of the residents. And so it worked very well to help, and music is a wonderful gift. And this is it's a very challenging issue, but I think that with the dollars that we can provide for research and grant programs to help families, that it's a very important issue for us to take up. And we have all the ability to handle this in Minnesota with the research and the knowledge from our medical background in Minnesota. With that, I would encourage any of the other members, if they would be willing to sign on to this bill, and look forward to passing it in the future.
Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I just thank you for the time and the support. These were hard truths to hear today. But there is hope, and we have that before us, so I thank you for that. Let me just say two quick things. I know Still Alice is receiving a lot of nominations for awards, and I look forward to seeing that movie. I hope you do too, to help us better understand this disease. I have found in just the few days since I have introduced this bill, there is a untold story in this state. Everywhere I go, somebody is sharing with me their story of Alzheimer's. So I'll be putting up a blog for the citizens of Minnesota to not only keep abreast of this bill, but more importantly, to share their stories. I think that's important, and so you can look for that. I also want to reassure Rep. McDonald that the bill before you is not trickle down to caregivers and support. Actually, it's built into the bill, and so you will see that there are statewide and regional dementia grants doing exactly what you spoke of. So you can rest assured of that. So with that, Mr. Chair and Committee, I thank you for your great support and the opportunity for this informational hearing today. Look forward to working with you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Nelson and Representative Keel, and to all of the advocates, testifiers. Welcome to the Capitol today, and best of luck as you move forward with the upcoming year and this piece of legislation. And please feel free to contact your legislators here in the House of Representatives or in the Senate. If you're a constituent, make sure you stop by your representative's office. And if you're a constituent, they should see you. And they're always happy to see folks from home. So please don't be a stranger to your House member or to your senator today at the Capitol. Once again, thank you so very much for this great testimony. And we are adjourned.